So I thought we could start in here. I'll start with a talk, as usual, and then we'll have a led meditation, and then we'll have a silent tea break in which we're inviting you to sort of just help yourself to a cup of tea and then join a discussion circle. I think this time we'll probably need two, won't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll have one in here. Should I be in here, and where would you like to be? Would you like to be?
Well, we have been going in the shrine.
Okay.
So if we're very careful with our drinks.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly if they're not, you know, water's fine, you know. But.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think most of you are familiar with the meditation, group meditation reviews that we're doing, but maybe one or two aren't, so. So the idea in each group is, it's if you've done meditation interviews on a retreat, that's the idea. But the difference is that it's in a group, it's not one-to-one. So anybody that wants to can take the opportunity to say something about their current experience of meditation practice. You know. So it might be about the meditation we've just done. If not, it's about something that's kind of live for you at the moment, a theme, a thread in your meditation practice. So we don't really want the backstory. We want something that's happening now. And there's an opportunity for Kilijah, Neil, myself to sort of engage with you in that. And we'd like you to avoid opening up into a broader discussion. So that's the idea of group meditation reviews. And then we'll finish with a more open, unled sit. Okay, so that's the shape of the evening. So, okay, so I'll launch into my talk. I wonder if you could get me a glass of water, Claire. Thanks, I forgot to get myself here. So in terms of the system of practice, we're sort of in a bit of a transition point between spiritual receptivity and spiritual death. So Aravira has been doing a series on spiritual receptivity for the last couple of months, I think. The last one was last Tuesday. We've got a Padmasambhava festival today and a Padmasambhava evening on Sangha night on Tuesday, and then we're going to be moving into the spiritual death quadrant of the system practice after that. Thanks very much. So I wanted to frame today's talk as a sort of transition. It's largely a sort of spiritual receptivity talk, but there's a particular practice which is called seeing by not seeing, which I'll go into. So in a way that's quite resonant with the sort of inside dimension of what Bhante calls spiritual death. But the main framework is around just sitting, and I want to draw on a set of five justs which Subhuti came up with. So the five justs are just settling, just waiting, just watching, just enjoying, and just sitting proper. Now, I'm only going to draw on three of those. So just settling, an excellent way into practice, an excellent opening move, and something that you can do quite broadly, just as an opening move in meditation. Just sitting proper is kind of where we're trying to get to, so I'll say a bit about what that's about. But the main focus is on this middle one, just watching. And my suggestion is that so watching is not actually something we're trying to cultivate. It's, if you like, it's like a sort of subtle hindrance. So there's a comparison with, for example, proliferation. So proliferation is like one of the more subtle hindrances. You might have heard of proliferation and decay as the excess concentration hindrances. So it might actually be an indication that you're making progress, and you know, you've been in something more like full-on anxiety, and now you're just in some subtle proliferation. So great, you're making progress. But you wouldn't think in terms of, oh great, let's cultivate some more proliferation. I want some more proliferation in my mind and my meditation practice. It's not something you'd want more of. So watching, I'd suggest, is something like that. Okay, so a few words about just settling first. So in just settling, we're kind of deeply relaxing into the meditation, and we're letting the content of the mind settle. So imagine one of these snow globes. You just sort of, it's all shaken up, snow's all over the place. You just rest it on a stable surface, stable base, and leave it, and the disturbance settles, and it all clarifies. So we're letting the mind settle, we're letting the mind unravel, so that the mind is not stirred up. And the consequence is that the sense of awareness we bring to our experience becomes more subtle. So as that sense of awareness becomes more subtle, we might find that we pick up a subtle sense of watching our experience. You might find that this is something you're familiar with from mindfulness of breathing. Sometimes people talk in terms of watching the breath. And when you're doing that, you're sort of identifying with something you experience as a point of view, as a place from which you're watching, and then everything else becomes objectified. So in the mindfulness of breathing, you're sort of, if you're relating to it in terms of watching the breath, you're probably objectifying the breath as a thing which has a particular location which you can look at, which you can follow. That's another word that gets used, following the breath, as though the breath is in one place and you're following it, sort of, I don't know, down the windpipe and then up the windpipe, and so on. So that's the separation, identifying with a point of view and then objectifying the rest of the experience as a sort of object. More on that later. What we're trying to get to, in contrast, is just sitting proper. Identifies this quite effectively as, he calls it, integrated awareness. So there's this talk of Bhante's From Alienated Awareness to Integrated Awareness. So I want to just quote a bit from that, because he puts it really well. So just to frame this quote, in just sitting proper, we're relaxing out of the tendency of the mind to relate to experience in terms of the separated watcher, watching an objectified experience. And we're leading to something more like aware experience. You know? So rather than awareness being separated from the content, there's just aware content. Okay. And this is how Bhante describes it. He says, the third level is that of experience plus awareness. This is integrated awareness. Here, by very virtue of the fact that we are now experiencing integrated awareness, the emotional experience tends to be positive rather than a negative one. Here, we have the experience, but also saturating the experience, identical even with the experience, we have awareness. The awareness and the experience have come together. We might say that the awareness gives clarity to the experience, while the experience gives substance to the awareness. The awareness and the experience coalesce without it really being possible to draw a line between the two, isolating experience on this side and awareness on that side. You're fully immersed in the emotion in the sense of actually experiencing it. But at the same time, together with it, without being different from it, there is the awareness. Okay, so like awareness and experience blended. You might know the simile, visual simile for first dhyana, which is soap and water perfectly blended. So you can take that in different ways, but I mean, that sort of image of a perfect blend. There's no water left over that's dripping out, and there's no soap powder left over that hasn't been saturated. So awareness and experience. One thing that's implicit in that, he says the emotional experience tends to be positive rather than negative. I think I'd sort of emphasise that a bit more and say that so you're moving from a relative distance to a much closer integration with experience. And I think it's most meaningful to talk about that move from distance to closeness in more emotional terms. Yeah. So a full-blown alienated awareness would be a very cold, calculating distance. It's like the mindfulness of a hunter watching his target, that sort of mindfulness. Whereas a sort of the closeness of an integrated awareness is more like an intimacy, being intimate with experience. So there's an emotional closeness. And that's really the key discriminator, between alienated awareness and integrated awareness. If you're finding that your experience is kind of emotionally disconnected and cold, then that's quite an indicator of alienated awareness. And integrated awareness, it's not just a sort of, I don't know, it can almost seem like a conceptual thing, the sort of immersing one thing in another and so on, the descriptions, but I think it's more helpful to think of it as a sort of emotional intimacy, and intimacy with experience. Yeah. Okay. So, quoting Vasantra a bit from the Shepherd's Search for Mind Retreat, he's saying, at this point of integrated awareness, the mind knows its own nature. It's knowing itself, but not as an object. It's just, it's the experience of knowing itself. So that's just setting proper, that's sort of where we're aiming for. So don't worry if you don't get there, it's more something to orientate yourself by. And somewhere in the middle, as I say, as you settle, you might notice, as the awareness becomes more subtle, that there's a subtle sense of watching experience going on. Okay. So I've said most of that. So what do you do? What do you do if you find yourself in the state of watching experience, perhaps following a sort of objectified experience? And the suggestion I wanted to draw in, which is coming from the Shepherd's Search for Mind retreat I just did with Vasantra. So the Shepherd's Search for Mind is one of the most approachable, I think, teachings of Milarepa. And just now, the work's coming out, so I just want to point in the direction of this one, recent volume, Milarepa and the Art of Discipleship. And it includes a lot of seminars that Bhante did on the songs of Milarepa, and particularly this one's got the seminar on the Shepherd's Search for Mind in. And in the Shepherd's Search for Mind, at the end of that story, Milarepa sort of sings this song. He's a great one for singing these songs of experience, songs of enlightenment. And in this song, which I'll quote it now actually, he's talking about this practice of seeing by not seeing. Yeah. So I wanted to sort of go into this practice of seeing by not seeing because it's a way of moving forwards from a just watching state more towards just sitting proper. So here's Milarepa, and he says, or he sings, I'm going to say it. This consciousness that clings to an eye, if you look, you definitely won't be able to see it. By the power of meditating on Mahamudra, you'll see by not seeing anything at all. Having been lifted up with a pure aspiration, to the completely pure path of seeing. There, Vipassana directly realizes the purity that cannot be seen, and then the faults of mind's hopes and fears will be known. Without going anywhere, you'll arrive at the Buddha's ground. Without looking at anything, you'll see Dharmakaya. Without achieving anything, your aim will be spontaneously realised. And I'll just say a little bit about a couple of the words in there you may not be familiar with. So, Mahamudra is the sort of concluding practice, the completion practice within the Kagyu, Tibetan Kagyu tradition. So it's equivalent to Dzogchen, which is the completion practice within the Nyingma tradition. And the style of practice is very much one of just sitting within both. Dharmakaya is the Dharma body of the Buddha. So the Buddha is said to have a physical body, a archetypal or symbolic body, and a Dharma body. This is the Dharmakaya. So the Dharmakaya is like a way of saying reality, if you like. So the Buddha gained enlightenment by seeing directly and realizing his non-difference from the reality of experience. And so that's Dharmakaya. Okay. So that's kind of pointing in the direction of just sitting proper, I think. And I think if I sort of describe the practice in a more practical terms, and then try and reconnect that with some of what Milarepa is saying. I can also really recommend you to read The Shepherd's Search for Mind and the Songs of Milarepa, and there's actually quite a short section of this, which is the seminar on it, which unpacks it. So supposing you find yourself in a situation where you're watching experience, you've got this sense of just watching. I think the first thing to encourage you all to do is to see if you can connect with a sense of warmth, of emotional engagement and sensitivity and tenderness and intimacy with experience, to particularly counter any sort of cold detachment that might be involved in the watching. Hopefully we're not going to be in that sort of an alienated state, and it's going to be much more of a sense of there's just a subtle watching going on still. It's quite warm, it's quite engaged, but it's just still a subtle separation, subtle watching. Yeah. So from there, a good first move is just to notice that. It's always good to just notice. Noticing is one of the sort of subtle antidotes to hindrances generally. It's a bit like, you know, the tale of Rumpelstiltskin, this little gremlin. And as soon as you kind of say Rumpelstiltskin, it kind of disappears. You know? It's rather similar with Mara in the Pali Canon, in the stories of the Buddha and Mara. Mara. But Mara is this figure that symbolises limitation and obstruction and hindrance and the forces inimical to practice towards enlightenment. And he'll kind of turn up in disguise and he'll cause trouble, and then at a certain point says, "Ah, I see you, Mara," and then he just kind of vanishes. So noticing, recognition is a good first move. Noticing a sense of separation in the watching. So this is sort of, it's not just a sort of conceptual recognition, it's kind of noticing the quality in your relation to your experience that's actually happening now. Yeah. So it's always a sort of sensitivity to the immediate experience. Is there a sense of separation, a sense of watching in that? And if you find that there is, then noticing the sort of any sense of tension or unsatisfactoriness in that, a sense of disconnect or distance. Okay. And also you might find that you're more able to notice underlying views. You know, so it's just something that comes with Dharma practice, which we've all been doing for quite some time now. We sort of one of the ways in which our experience is conditioned is that we bring a view to our experience, and then that sort of creates a world. Yeah. We're just kind of assuming it's this way, and then we experience it something like that way. So noticing in basic stories that we're bringing to our experience. So are we relating to experience as a thing? You know, are we relating to our body as a thing? And then once we've noticed that, we can sort of investigate to see if we can find what we're assuming to be there. So if there's a sense of watching, we're assuming there's a sort of a point of view, a sort of subjectivity, and we're assuming that there's a sort of thing that we're watching. Yeah? So to take the example of mindfulness of breathing, if we're watching the breath, can we actually find that breath that we're watching? Is there something that has a particular location, which is the breath? Yeah. If it's more open and it's just a just sitting practice, can we actually find a separation between experience and awareness? Yeah. So we're assuming that probably, it's probably from about here, I certainly find I tend to identify with the place behind my eyes and between my ears. Now, in meditation, it's going to be principally a physical experience. You know, there might be some sounds, but the sounds are probably going to be from the road or from elsewhere. So in terms of our own embodied experience, it's going to be principally a tactile experience. emotion. So it's not going to be principally a visual experience. You know. So what's special about this point, you know, if you're experiencing physical sensation? So we're investigating the experience to sort of see, okay, can I actually find this operation? There seems to be a watching from here to down there. What's going on here? What's going on down there? Is there actually a separation of awareness from experience? Now, hopefully, you won't find one. So I want to leave that open. Obviously, I don't want to just give you the answers, because the idea is to look in your experience and see what actually is there. But supposing you find that, I can't find this separation. I can't find this separated watcher distinct from experience. Now, if we're looking somewhere where we really expected to find something and then we don't see it, then that absence can be quite tangible. So to take an example, if you'd made a very firm arrangement, a really clear date to meet someone in a cafe at a certain time, and you turn up and you're in this cafe at that time and you can't see them, and you look all the way around the cafe and you really can't see them anywhere, their absence will be quite tangible. Yeah? It's not like the absence of anybody else. It's like, no, I really expected to find them here and they're not here. So that absence can be quite tangible. So if you're looking for something that on a certain level you really expected to find, then the absence will be quite tangible. Okay. Now, tangible is good because it means you can centre your attention on that. You can always centre your attention on something that's really apparent and tangible. So that's the suggested practice. You sort of centre your attention on this tangible absence of a separation of a watcher from experience, and then relax into that centred attention. So you probably remember from lots of other meditation sessions I've been doing, sort of a very broadly applicable twofold aspect of meditation practice, which is you establish the practice and then you relax into that. Yeah. And very often the going deeper is in the relaxing in. Yeah. So you start with posture, you establish a supportive meditation posture, and then you relax into that posture. Yeah. And then you establish your attention on a particular chosen centre. So the most obvious one is mindfulness of breathing. So you're focusing on the tip of your nose. Centre your attention there, establish that centred attention, relax into it. So that pattern is very much the case here as well. We're looking for this watcher, this separation of experience. We're finding that absence quite tangible, so we can centre our attention on that. That's establishing an attention and then relaxing into that. So as we relax into this kind of just being with this tangible absence, it's a way of relaxing out of experiencing something as distant, yeah? Experiencing something as being watched. Yeah? Because what's actually happening when we have this sense of watching our experiences, we're sort of fabricating a separation. Well, there isn't really a separation experience. We're constructing this separated me, watching this separated experience. So this is a way of relaxing out of that fabrication. Yeah, or unfabricating is a way of putting it. Yeah. And moving into integrated awareness. So we're starting with a less integrated state and a more separated state, and we're kind of relaxing out of that separation into a more integrated awareness. Okay. So coming back with that description to Milarepa. This consciousness that clings to an I. So we're kind of reinterpreting that as this awareness which is kind of identifying with a certain point of view, a certain place from which it's seeing experience. If you look, you won't be able to see it. Yeah? If you look for this separated point of view from this watcher, suggesting this, you won't be able to see it. if you're really expecting it to be there, because it really does seem like you're watching experience, then that failure to see it will be quite tangible. By the power of meditating on Mahamudra, you'll see by not seeing anything at all. So this is the basic practice, as I understand it, of seeing by not seeing. It's something you expect to see, it's quite tangibly not there, so you're not seeing it. Yeah? So what you are seeing is how things actually are, yeah? That they're not actually separated. Having been lifted up with a pure aspiration to the completely pure path of seeing, there, the Passiona directly realizes the purity that cannot be seen. So Mirarepa is really emphasizing the value and the support of your own aspiration and of the context and of the well, aspiration like bodhicitta, you know, the desire for enlightenment, and it occurs within the context of a sangha practicing together. And it occurs in the context of a connection that we have with the three jewels, with the Buddha, with our Yidang, with the Yidang is a particular bodhisattva or Buddha figure we might have a connection with our friends in the Sangha. So all of these are kind of supports. So support's one way of putting it, being lifted up is another way of putting it. When you feel supported, you can really relax. So this is a very helpful basis for just sitting practice. Yeah. It takes actually quite a lot of... It takes quite a lot of something. I'm not sure quite what it takes quite a lot of, but it's not that trust. Straightforward.
Trust
is a good word, actually. Yeah. It takes quite a lot of trust to actually just stop, you know, to just relax into your experience. And stop fabricating and constructing stuff, stop proliferating, and just be with the experience that's unfolding. And that trust can really draw on the supports that you have. So if you have a strong Sangha support, then draw on that, bring that to mind. If you have a strong connection with a Buddha or a Bodhisattva figure as your own Yidang, then bring that to mind, draw on that. If you have a strong aspiration, then bring that to mind. And then that can enable you to really relax into the practice. And then the faults of minds, hopes and fears will be known. So Mahamudra talks very much in terms of hopes and fears. I think other traditions would probably talk in terms of greed and hatred. But hopes and fears, yeah. And without going anywhere, you'll arrive at the Buddha's ground. So there's nowhere to go. It's all happening here. It's all here. It's all now. Yeah. It's a sense of deepening into the depth dimension of the current moment. Without looking at anything, you see Dharmakaya. So this is this practice of not seeing. Yeah. And if you deepen into that, you get to just sitting proper, you get to integrated awareness, and you get to just sitting with your experience as it really is. And that's a way of understanding what Dharmakaya means. Without achieving anything, your aim will be spontaneously accomplished. So there's nothing to achieve. There's no status to be gained. If you're looking for attainments, if you're looking for status, if you're looking for affirmation, I'm afraid it's not on offer. So yeah, you may remember from the Heart Sutra. How's it put? Or is there any attainment, something like that?
Holding to nothing, whatever.
No wisdom to attain.
Wisdom to attain, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So that's a sort of gloss on the Sanskrit, which is no attainment, no non-attainment. The no non-attainment tends to get completely dropped from the translation, yeah. Now, prakti, not prakti, there is no attainment, there's no non-attainment.
Attainment to his emptiness.
Mm. Well, take of that as you will. there's nothing to achieve, let's put it that way. Okay. So that's it in a nutshell. I didn't manage to get around to... printing up copies of my handout, but I will put it up on the website, so do look for this. And I've added a couple of sources to look at as well. I couldn't actually find one of Sabiti. I was looking for Sabiti Five Justs, and absolutely nothing came up except a talk by Desantra where he quotes Sabiti. Mm-hmm. So maybe Sabiti's disowning the whole teaching. but there's a talk by Saban, by Desantra on it. And this talk by Sangharakshita, From Alienated Awareness to Integrated Awareness, is very worth having a listen to as well. And then finally, the Shepherd's Search for Mind. It's in the 100,000 Songs of Milarepa. It's one of the songs. It's quite a short section of that, and there's a somewhat expanded discussion about it in the commentary and in the complete work, so that's worth looking at as well. Okay, so there's an opportunity for a few questions, if there's anything that I can help clarify before we go in and give that a go with the red meditation.
Could you say something again, explain a bit what you said? if you're looking for something that's not there, there's an absence, and the absence is tangible.
Yeah.
When you said that, I just thought, is the apps the tangibleness? Is that just a thought? Like, they're not here. I expect them to be here, they're not here. Is that just a thought, or is it actually... I didn't get it as being something as tangible. Maybe I didn't think about it right. I got it more as just something in my mind.
Yeah. Well, the idea my absence. Sense is that thoughts articulate something. Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe it doesn't connect for you so much, but for me it's like this scenario of I've made a firm arrangement to meet someone and I go there and I'm really expecting them to be there and they're not there. There's quite a difference between them not being there and, say, Juliet not being there, you know, just someone else not being there. Okay, so it's just, okay, so Juliet just doesn't happen to be there, I wasn't expecting it to be. It's the contrast between what I was really expecting and what I'm actually experiencing. It's a sort of tangibleness.
It's more of an emotion, because you maybe were expecting to meet somebody. There's a disappointment, maybe. So is it more of an emotion?
More of an emotion,
rather than is that tangible?
An assumption, maybe, that this is how it's going to be, or this is how it is. And that's what we assume in our meditation space, maybe, or generally.
Yeah, so you're assuming something and you're not finding it, so that's quite unsettling, perhaps. Yeah. So the more I was kind of, identified with or attached to a particular experience, the more kind of tangible, unsettling, unnerving.
I get what Kuriyama just said as well. Yeah, so if you're sitting down to meditate and you're expecting something to be there, in the past, us might have thought it's not there, I've got nothing to work with, but now you can work with the fact that it's not there.
Tangible.
That's what's there is the not thereness.
Yeah.
And that's what you work with, because that's what's there.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. So an example with the mindfulness of breathing. I don't know if you've got there.
You get it, didn't you?
So one experience I've had from time to time with mindfulness of breathing is that as the mind settles, the experience becomes more subtle and less tangible and less apparent. So I might start breathing quite strongly, quite heavily. There might be an actual sound I can hear. There might be a very clear physical sensation. As the meditation deepens, that all calms, and the actual sense experience becomes less strong, less apparent, less immediate. And sometimes sort of just focusing on this tip of the nose, you sort of get to the point where I can't actually identify any distinct physical sensation. I can't feel the movement of the air. I can't hear the movement of the air. I don't have a sense of the body moving. Somehow, I still seem to have a sense of when I'm breathing in and when I'm breathing out, but I can't really pin that on any particular sense experience yet. And then it's like the object of the meditation is just gone. It's like, where is this experience of breath that I'm supposed to be focusing my awareness on? I just can't find it. It's just, there's nothing there.
It sounds like something that will be a bit more obvious when you sit down and do it.
Yeah.
Try and unpick it.
Maybe.
Yeah, but no, that's helpful. Thanks. Mm.
Can I just ask something?
Julia.
I kind of get from that the whole, you're trying to get us to a point where experience and awareness is all together and you're not watching it.
Yeah.
And that normally happens like towards, naturally sort of happens towards the end of my meditation, but
okay.
I do know what you mean when you're watching it as well. You,
okay.
When that happens, when you're watching it, do you, what do you do? Do you push that away or do you just bring awareness to the fact you sort of stood back from it a bit?
Well, this is,
I suppose that's what you're saying, separation, isn't it?
Yeah. So this is something I've been exploring doing recently, since this Shepherd Search for Mind retreat. And so the suggestion is that if I'm not watching, so I'm looking for the watcher. Can I actually find a separation from experience? So here's an experience which I'm kind of watching. Is the awareness of that experience actually happening somewhere else? Can I find that distance, that distance? And I find that I can't find it. Somehow there's still a sense I'm watching, but I can't actually find that in my experience. And then there's a sort of tangibility to that kind of disconnect from what I assume is the case and what I'm actually experiencing to be the case. And then just centering my attention on that, and then relaxing into that. So that's my practice at the moment.
So relaxing more into awareness and experience together, if you put your energies more into that bit than trying to work out who's watching, is a good way to do it.
Seems to help, yeah, because as opposed to trying to have a different experience, you know, it's like, oh, I seem to be in this state of separation. I don't want to be, I want to be in this state that I understand to be one of integrated awareness, so trying to have a different.
Because if you try and work out who's watching, and then it seems like there's somebody else watching, but it's not even a real thing, is it? You're just trying to work out something.
Well, that's kind of going back, isn't it? You're gesturing going back. Well, try and going forward. So, you know, so here's this experience which I'm watching. Here's this physical, tangible, embodied experience. Yeah. So there's the experience. Is that an experience that I'm being aware of from a distance? Is the awareness actually somewhere else other than that, where that experience is? Can I find a separation between experience and the awareness? So that's, in a way, that's more helpful because it's going to the sense experience, whereas this idea of, I seem to be watching from here, and okay, so what's going on there, and there's sort of maybe something behind there, it's getting a bit more abstract. So.
Maybe you could be really careful the way you lead us in that particular stage, you know, really make
it. No pressure.
No pressure.
Do this.
Well, you've been practicing it, Pranam.
Yeah. Okay, so hopefully that gives you enough to have an idea enough to give it a go. That's it, really. Yeah. Let's try that.